at the same time. So why don't we, before we vote on reliability and validity, let's go to eSpec. And Zahid, let me ask that if this is a similar issue to the last one, if we could just state it as such and deal with it the same way, if you feel there's something different, that this measure is fine from an e-measure point of view, or there's a different problem here, then please just try and direct us. So I don't want to get back to a half-hour discussion about the e-measure.
Sure, and I think it's similar issues, and part of the it's similar issues in definitions, basically. Part of the definitions, the code sets or the codes that are selected, may pertain to the discussion that we just had, because it includes codes that would be not specific for adenoma polyps, but could be, you know, any polyp. And so, you know, that's one issue. The other issue is that the screening for high-risk colonoscopy code is different. The CPT-2 code is different from what is specified here. This code, the CPT-2 code that's specified in this measure is the one that's for not a high risk, but this one is by definition a high risk colonoscopy because it has a previous adenoma. And actually, in the original specification, it is specified as a high risk colonoscopy by definition.
Wait, I think you lost me on that one. So you're saying that
there is a code G0105 for high risk colonoscopy versus
right.
The average risk, which is G0121.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that the original specification calls out for the high risk colonoscopy because this is a colonoscopy that is done in patients who have had a previous adenoma, which by definition is a high risk colonoscopy.
Marty, this is Bill Brill. I have
yes.
Again just recognized that the G codes were established by Medicare, that they predate this. They were established by Medicare because Congress directed the agency to cover colorectal cancer screening. And further, if one looks carefully at the way that G0105 is constructed, that really talks about a congressional description of when colorectal cancer surveillance, which is within 48 months. So I would be a little bit cautious about trying to pull in congressional intent and mix it in with multi-society guideline recommendations.
Right. So in the e-measure, then, are you proposing, or have you proposed then that whichever colonoscopy code came in, if it came with the high-risk value set code, ICD-9 code, that would be good enough to consider, that would be how you would define high-risk rather than the description of the CPT or HCPCS code?
So Andy, the issue, this is Zahid again, just to make sure I state it clearly. In the original specification, G0105 is part of the original specification. So if what Joel just said is true, then we should remove it from there, because otherwise we'll approve it with that in place.
Oh, so your point is we're not using the same code set for the procedure codes
yes.
in the regular measure versus the e-measure set.
Yes.
And I can't think of a reason why they wouldn't be the same set of CPT codes or any HCPCS code, procedure codes.
This is Kendra Hanley from the AMA. I'm actually looking at the detail and I'm realizing that that's an error. The G code that's included in 659 should in fact be the colonoscopy for patients at high risk.
Okay, so it sounds like what we have here is very similar issues to the previous one, that there may be some screening colonoscopy codes that have to be matched up better. We've already dealt with the medical reasons codes value set. That was okay. But we're concerned about the high-risk set of codes as to whether all the codes are specifically high-risk or not, such as the acidophilic esophagitis, the same issue as before. So I would think that the same work to be done to harmonize essentially the code set with the e-measure and the regular measure should happen with this one as well, and probably it would almost be identical work being done, if not identical.
Yes, I agree. The only other thing I'll comment on is that there are colon polyp codes that are specified in the eSpec with SNOMED and ICD-10, but not ICD-9, and I think that needs to be added.
This is Kendra from the PCTI, if I can speak to that. The reason is that in ICD-9, we don't actually have the level of granularity to capture the concept that we're looking for.
Okay. Yep. That's fine.
That's fair.
Okay, so I would think that this will once again table the e-measure portion of it, because I think that we'll come to the exact same situation with this as the prior code, and in fact the fix will be almost identical, and we can just do them both together rather than have it not pass at this point, when I think it will pass in the future. So let's go past that, and let's then go back to the voting on reliability and feasibility on the regular spec measure, not the e-measure, and go ahead and vote on reliability here. And once again, we have three folks on the phone: Phil, Stu, and oh my gosh, I'm hurting. So, John, is it John?
Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to remember who the three people are going to vote out loud if they want to.
That's right. Hey, this is Phil. I vote moderate for reliability and validity.
Stu Reynolds, I also give it moderate for both those ratings.
John Morton, I agree with moderate for both.
Okay, and we have 10 votes already in for reliability electronically, so if we want to call out the results, then we'll move on to the validity.
Yep, that's one high and 12 moderate for reliability.
Okay.
And are you ready to go to vote? Okay.
Yes, we're ready to vote on validity. We already have the three votes as moderate for the folks on the phone who are voting on the phone, so now we're looking for 10 electronic votes. And we have 7 so far, 8. My gosh, I feel like it's election night. We're up to 9. 10 precincts are in. All right. Thank you. So you want to call out that vote, please?
We have 11 moderate and 2 low.
Okay. Let's move on to feasibility. Phil, I don't know whether you have anything specific to say about feasibility on this one.
Feasibility and usability, my comments really reflect what I already said for reliability and validity, with respect to the fact that this is a measure that's already been approved in the past, is in PQRS, and we're looking to reapprove it. So that, with respect to the measure as defined, I think the feasibility and usability is moderate, with the caveats I already mentioned.
And no evidence that this measure has ever caused any harm or anybody. I forget what it said in the submission, but I have to go back to look. But I think there was no such evidence.
So
any comments from anyone on the committee? Go ahead. Someone was going to speak up. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interject.
Yeah, this is Zahid. Are we discussing feasibility for the e-measures component as well, or we're going
to
do
No, that? I think we should not, because, frankly, that's tied to the code set, to be honest with you, because once we agree on that, feasibility and usability in electronic form takes a whole different meaning. I don't want to vote half of the e-measure, not the other half. I don't think that makes much sense for us.
Okay, because there are some feasibility issues that are unique to the e-measure side of it in this.
Well, then maybe just bring them up, because I'm not sure whether we're going to do the final vote on this electronically through email, or whether we're doing it I guess we're doing it on call meeting. But if you have a few comments about feasibility and usability for the electronics, go ahead and comment now, so we'll have it on record and use that when we meet again.
So I think in terms of the feasibility, the sort of history of colon adenomatous colon polyp is just a history of the colon polyp. And so somehow the recommendations are tied specifically to a report. And in many cases within EHRs, the history of the pathology report, if it is codified, might not be in the report itself. So I believe that that really needs to be looked at and tested to make sure that it will perform, you know, as intended within an EHR environment or, you know, within an e-measure environment.
Thank you. Any other comments regarding feasibility or usability for this measure before we go for a vote? And let's go ahead and vote on feasibility. Remember, this is the non-e-measure spec. This is just the regular spec. And we'll ask the folks on the phone. So, Phil?
Yes, I'm moderate. You'll see it all the way through. I'm moderate on all the markers, and I'll vote yes in the end. Just sorry to jump ahead. I'm just saying that because you're getting a voice vote from me.
Yeah, that's okay. Stu? Stuart? I'll
do a moderate for both, and I guess I'll throw out my yes as well to streamline things.
Okay, thank you. And Jonathan? You out there on mute somewhere? Am I missing a voter?
We seem to be missing John's vote, so we can try to collect that from him later if necessary. At this time, we have 12 moderates for feasibility.
All right, and let's move on to usability then.
Just straight to the vote?
Yeah.
Yes, because we already discussed and there were no more comments about it, so I think we can vote on usability. And we've already had the two on the phone say moderate, and John, I presume, is not available. And one more. Did everyone online vote? Because we had 10 votes before. We only have 9 online. Oh, there we go.
Right.
Okay. You want to go ahead and call it?
Yes, we have 12 moderate for usability.
All right. And then the endorsement, we've already had 2 say yes. And then everyone else online, they should say yes or no. And we're waiting for one more vote. Not that I don't want to give people adequate time to think, so think. Okay, all the votes are cast.
All right, we have 11 yes and 1 no.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Phil. Thanks for all for that. And we'll move on to the next measure, which I don't know which measure it is.
Before we go on, Andy, I just wanted to ask this part quickly, though. In some way, can we reflect either in limiting the time for this quality indicator or in some other way, make it clear that, you know, trying to find the right words here. Basically,
if we get this back in
2 years, that's not going to fly.
Right. So I think we've made it pretty clear that the next go-around, which would naturally be 3 years, would be extremely difficult for this measure to make it through. And I can't say it anymore, and we've said
okay.
it enough.
That's
I don't think we necessarily have the option at this time to give less than a three-year less than a full A up or down on this.
Okay.
But it would take that long probably for the developer to, you know, retool the measure and test it anyway. So I think it's reasonable to give that strong message, not that we have to vote on that, but we've made it abundantly clear.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And Andy, this is Joel. On behalf of the measure developers, yes, we've heard that measure. Probably we've heard those comments quite loud and quite clearly, and we will respond as appropriate.
Thank you. Thank you, Joel. And thank you to the developer and general AMA as well.
All right. The next one is not, I'm not leading that discussion. And in fact, I believe I just want to reiterate to folks that I will not vote and participate because of a conflict of interest.
Okay. So I think I am going to do that one. This is, we're doing 635 now or 622?
622.
Okay.
And Chris, so, it's a little hard to hear you if you could speak up or move closer to your phone.
Okay. And I let Suzanne know that I have to hop off right around 155 or so, so we may or may not get through this measure, but we'll try. So this is the active health measure, looking at whether an upper GI study was done in patients with alarm symptoms of GERD. And I'm not sure who is the discussant for this.
It's John Morton.
Oh, John. Could you take us through this, John, please? John, are you there? Did John drop off?
Now we lost. We had lost John with the voting on the last one. I wonder what's happened with him.
Oh. Well, who's discussing the other measure, 635?
Rick, this is Rick Lochtemeyer. I was assigned that task.
Rick, would you mind, maybe we should just do that one since John's not available right now, regarding hepatitis A vaccination in patients with chronic liver disease and other active health management measures.
Okay. This is 635, and the title is Chronic Liver Disease, Hepatitis A Vaccination. It's a maintenance review. This active health is the steward, and it's a process measurement at the population level. The brief description is that it's measuring the percentage of adult patients with chronic liver disease who have received at least one hepatitis vaccine vaccination. The developer originally defined the numerator as adults with chronic liver disease who either had at least one hepatitis A vaccination or had a document immunologic testing for HAV. They've dropped the latter it was raised in stage one, and they've elected to drop it, and now they define it at the percent of chronic liver disease adults with hepatitis A vaccination. Numerator is adults with chronic liver disease who have received at least one hepatitis A vaccination. The denominator is adults with chronic liver disease, and they have numerous exclusions. The data sources are quite diverse. It includes administrative claims, e-clinical data, that includes electronic health record and electronic lab testing. They weren't able, under electronic lab testing, my understanding is they could test whether the hepatitis A antibody test was performed, but they did not have the results of whether the results were positive for susceptibility. Positive for non-susceptibility or negative for susceptibility. And I believe that's why they dropped it off the numerator. They also use a health care provider survey and patient self-report supplemented by if the patient's in a disease management program, RN questioning and reporting. All the data is processed through a clinical rule engine. There is feedback to both the provider and the patient. And there's opportunity then to collect the provider and patient feedback. The denominator exclusions are pretty standard. It's a history of viral hepatitis, and I presume that they mean viral hepatitis A, and that's either diagnosed by claims data or health HIE anytime in the past, or self-reported allergy to the vaccine, hepatitis A vaccine, either reported by in the personal health record or by a telephone RN assessment. And then the general exclusions include somebody with a history of evidence of metastatic malignancy or disease, somebody with cancer who's received chemotherapy within the last 6 months, and a patient in skilled nursing in the past 3 months, and the rationale for adding that as the exclusion was to avoid holding the physician who cares for the patient during the transitional care from skilled care so that they would not be jab that they didn't give the hepatitis A vaccine. This is at the population level, and it's not at the physician level, so I'm not certain of that exclusion. The scientific acceptability, reliability, the measure is really quite specific and inclusive for hepatitis, chronic hepatitis B or chronic hepatitis C patients. However, I really couldn't find the specificity for other chronic liver diseases such as alcoholic liver disease or non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. The others, I believe, are identified by two claims for chronic liver disease, and I think that's a little bit ambiguous to me. And I'm not sure if they include non-alcoholic fatty liver disease as a chronic liver disease.
Rick, do you know where they specify the specificity and sensitivity of their numerators and denominators in this document?
No, I don't. I don't have that in front of me. I'm sorry. Oh, we went over the specificity before, I thought.
Yeah, I just don't see it on the document. I see. Maybe it's the bottom part of it. Sorry, go on.
I think it's for hepatitis C and B, it's really outstanding. For non-hepatitis B and C, chronic non-hepatitis B, chronic non-hepatitis C, it's just, I interpreted it as just two general diagnostic claims with other diagnosis, and I never saw what they considered as chronic liver disease, other than chronic hepatitis A, B and C.
Okay. Is the developer going to make any comment about that?
Yes. Hi, this is Bonnie Veer from Active Health. We apologize for the ambiguity. In the rule algorithm, we actually identify the name of our sort of elements, which is the label that we give to a set of codes. So in the liver disease chronic excluding hepatitis A element that you're seeing in the rule, you're seeing the requirement is that they need two of these diagnoses from claims or HIE in the past year. Embedded in that element are the exact codes that you're referring to. We have chronic hepatitis C, we have hepatorenal syndrome, we have other chronic hepatitis, we have portal hypertension, alcoholic liver disease, et cetera, and the sort of the legend for those for each element is in the code sets that we've attached.
Okay.
So you do consider as a chronic liver disease non-alcoholic fatty liver?
Yes.
Diagnosis?
Yes.
Okay. I'll get into that on the validity then. But the preliminary evaluations for reliability were three high, four moderate, and one low, and no insufficient.
Okay. All right.
I'll stop there and open it up for the reliability.
Any questions? Okay. So hearing none, let's move on to the next section.
Are we going to vote on reliability? Okay.
I did it at the end, I think.
Chris, it's Reva. It's probably easier if after you discuss it, then vote on it, then move on to validity and go right through them in order.
Okay. All right. Let's vote on reliability. Five, six.
Oh, Chris, are we voting? This is Stu Reynolds.
Yeah.
I have to vote. I vote moderate.
Okay, thanks, Stu. That's nine. And
this is Liliana Bordiano. I'd like to switch to telephone voting, and it's moderate for me.
Okay. That would be 10.
And I vote moderate. John Morton.
Oh, hey, John. Okay, great.
Hey, Chris.
And Phil, we need a vote from you as well.
Phil, still on the line?
Oh.
Phil, still on the line?
I think you might have dropped off. So I think that Phil dropped off. I counted 11 votes then?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, is that sufficient for us to move on?
Yep, so we have 11 moderate.
Okay. All right, Rick. Validity.
Okay, for validity, here's where I have some concerns. The measurement for sure is consistent with multiple expert consensus guidelines that people with chronic liver disease be vaccinated against hepatitis A. The concerns I have is most of the data where fulminant hepatitis was found was in patients with chronic hepatitis C and chronic hepatitis B, and everybody referred to the New England Journal article in 95 or 98. It was a really small set, but both of those conditions, if they had superinfection with hepatitis A, did have fulminant hepatitis, especially if it's chronic hepatitis C, and death actually in hepatitis C. So the metric being proposed is consistent with the literature, with the guideline recommendations. There are no outcome studies that vaccination actually will decrease that. And my concern is if you open it up for all people with fatty liver, the evidence for vaccination, even though the vaccine is safe, it seems like without any outcome data, that's a large population of people out there that we would be endorsing hepatitis A for. Well, it's all your metabolic syndrome patients and things like that. So that's one of my personal concerns on this. The validity also, the second concern I have on validity is without knowing the susceptibility of the person that you're going to vaccinate, there will be overutilization of hepatitis A vaccine. The VA looked at 33,000 patients with chronic hepatitis C. Two-thirds of those were tested for antibodies to hepatitis C, and of that group, one-third of the two-thirds tested, or approximately 20%, were not susceptible to hepatitis A. In other words, they either had had previous vaccination or previous infection. Hmm. There's a large group of people who have, especially in children, who have hepatitis A that are asymptomatic. And what we end up doing, the validity of this, is just giving hepatitis A to people who really have no benefit from it. I think the risks are low. But anyway, that's the concern I have.
Thank you.
Stop there.
Yeah, I think it would be helpful to hear from other GI experts about those two concerns. Bill, or anyone else have any comments about that, or Zaid?
Yeah, I think that was the one aspect that I've been sort of pondering over myself. I'm glad that the numbers were presented. So that really would be the concern, that this would sort of, I guess, mean that everybody with chronic liver disease, whether they had previous exposure or not. But I think they sort of initially tried to get at that, but it seemed like it was difficult for them to address that when they were testing for whether somebody had been tested, and assuming that meant that maybe they should be excluded. But I suppose the way this is being presented now is that you would literally have to, the question I have is, and I don't know the answer to it, is that if you do test someone who has chronic liver disease and not give them vaccine, how would they get treated in this measure?
The way the current exclusions include anybody with a history of previous hepatitis A.
No, not a history of, but let's say that a provider tests somebody for hepatitis A.
you know, they test for the antibody and someone is found immune and they decide not to give the vaccination. Now, that patient will be in the population if they are being measured. If that patient has a diagnosis of chronic liver disease, but in that scenario, would that patient fail the measure?
I think that patient would be excluded because then either you'd have history of the previous vaccination or a history of previous hepatitis A infection. And they do exclude people who have had previous hepatitis A infection.
Right, but by history, though, right?
Well,
not by testing, or is it by testing as well?
The health information exchange if they have had previous hepatitis A anytime.
No, not the history. I'm saying that the patient who does not have a known history of hepatitis A but tests positive for the antibody.
Right. I think the only two ways you can get that is previous vaccination or previous infection. I'm not sure.
Well, the infection could be clinical. You don't have to have a history of hepatitis A sometimes.
No, and that's the problem. In the pediatric population, 70 to 75% of people with documented hepatitis A infection are asymptomatic and not diagnosed, obviously.
Right. So my question is that how does that patient that does not have a, quote, history of hepatitis A was tested by a provider and found to have hepatitis A antibodies, would they, how would they sort of be excluded in this measure?
I think their problem list or their diagnostic or their electronic record would state previous history of hepatitis A, and that would exclude them.
Okay. So that
that's my interpretation.
The testing would have to lead to a specific diagnosis of a history of hepatitis A.
Correct.
Okay.
Or previous vaccination.
Okay.
That'd be added to the EMR, I guess, is what you're saying. So, but the other issue about vaccinating people that have fatty liver disease, I don't know about the risk-benefit ratio of that. Maybe someone else could comment about how big a deal that is.
So, I think there's no serious adverse events that are really associated with the Hep A vaccine. It's really quite safe. So that's number one. I mean, the safety and benefits of the vaccine are good. I think what gets interesting with advanced liver disease in general is the more advanced it is, the less you are likely to seroconvert with vaccination. So there's this issue of getting ahead of the patient's liver disease, try to, you know, immunize them before they become more advanced.
Right. Okay.
And I think that's across all chronic liver diseases.
Okay. Anyone else have any comments?
Well, I agree.
Go ahead.
I just said John Morton with a comment about fatty liver disease. I think everybody knows that there's potential for it to advance on to even cirrhosis, and hepatitis A may be an additional risk factor. And like the previous speaker mentioned, there's no downside to giving it. And it may be a protective factor along with, you know, the other recommendations about protecting your liver when you have fatty liver disease. And I think it's an appropriate measure.
Okay.
The only real downside that I see is the cost inefficiency. And then if you take it the next step, I think that all people with chronic liver disease is also recommended that they have chronic, that they be immunized for hepatitis B, and now we're talking about a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
This metric is specific, I should say, to hepatitis A only.
Right. Right. Any other comments about validity? So should we vote? The voting slide up there? Okay. Let's vote on this issue.
I think I'm out.
I think we're up to 4 voice votes now.
Yeah, this is Stu, moderate.
Floriana Bourdain, I'm voting low.
Okay, it's 3-7. So one more, I think.
John
Morton. John Morton, moderate.
Okay.
And is Phil still on the line?
And then we lost Phil.
Okay.
Okay. So that's 8-3, I think, in moderate.
Yes, that's 8 moderate, 3 low.
Okay. All right.
And moving to feasibility, the metric is already in operational use, and their data from stage 2, the results are very consistent with the similar data published in the VA, and it's a sophisticated engine that they're using. I think it's feasible, and there was in the preliminary, there was 4 high feasibility, 3 moderate, 1 low. No insufficient.
Okay, great. Any comments about feasibility or concerns?
Okay. So in the feasibility, I know that we have a sort of large variety of data sources that were used. I assume those would be feasible even outside some of these sort of controlled settings. For wider use?
Well, you know, that's a good point. They have a proprietary analytic engine that is doing this measurement, is my understanding. So I think to reproduce this, if you weren't part of a health plan that Active Health was serving, you would have to recreate that rules engine. Is that correct, our vendors from Active Health, did they mention that?
Yes, this is Bonnie from Active Health. Yes, they could reproduce it. Our measure specifications are publicly available for anyone who would like to use our measures along with the code sets. We make them publicly available as well. And additionally, we've had several organizations contact us about using our measures, and we've allowed them to be modified as long as they are aligned with the guidelines and the evidence, and they're not straying from that. They can modify it to suit their capabilities as long as they remain true to the measure.
Okay, so it's open source, basically, approach.
Oh, so, I mean, that does raise other issues, though. I mean, if they modify the specification, are they truly, I mean, what are those parameters of the modification? Because
well,
this measure with all the specifications is going through a very rigorous process.
We're voting
if others can modify and claim that they are doing this measure, would that still be valid?
Should I respond to that?
Go ahead.
So we really ask organizations to allow us to review if they're modifying in any way to make sure the measure is still very much aligned with sort of the you know, the heart of the measure. We definitely don't say that it is an NQF-endorsed active health measure if they are straying too far from measure specifications. So we're definitely not allowing for a huge, you know, wide interpretations of the measure.
Yeah, I mean, Zaid, we're approving or voting on a very specific proposal, and if anyone else represents a different set of measures as NQF endorsed, they would be incorrect, bottom line.
But would they then be able to claim that
no.
this has been
no.
Approved by the measure developer slash steward?
Not as an NQF endorsed measure.
Yeah.
I see. So the NQF endorsed measure is then only limited to Active Health or where Active Health may be used to dispute this measure.
Right. Thanks for clearing that up. Anyone else? Okay, let's vote on this.
So the folks who need to vote by voice.
Moderate for me, that's Stu.
Liliana?
Moderate.
And John?
Moderate.
Okay.
All right, so that's 2 high, 6 moderate, and 3 low.
Okay. And then the next is the vote.
Next is usability. Active Health Plans reports that they are planning on a year-on-year results, making it available for public review at their website. And the only unintended consequence I could see was a potential over-vaccination of non-susceptible individuals. Preliminary voting was high 3, moderate 3, and too low. I'll stop there.
Thanks. Any questions about that or concerns? Okay, then, hearing none, can we vote on that?
So I have a clarifying question, Chris. Is this usability for active health or for the general public at large?
I think it's for as described by active health. I mean, I don't know that we're – you mean in terms of – oh, you mean in terms of is this usable by people that – think of it this way. If you were a third party and wanted to use active health process, would it be available for you to use? And, accountability is in the same way.
Right. So the usability is in the context of its usability for active health or active health related.
I think it's really across the entire healthcare spectrum of people.
But then the healthcare spectrum can't use it unless it's through active health the previous conversation.
They could adopt the same rules.
They would have to be exactly the same thing, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Voice vote,
folks, ready?
Moderate for me. That's two.
Liliana?
Moderate, please.
And John?
Moderate.
Okay.
So it looks like we have one high, 8 moderate, and 2 low.
Okay. And then the last vote, overall vote. Any final comments or concerns? Okay, so let's vote on an endorsement for this or non-endorsement. And I guess if the people that are on the phone don't want to do a voice vote, you can email NQF staff.
Chris, this is Stu. I vote yes.
Okay.
John,
Liliana, I'm saying yes.
John, was that a yes?
Yes, please.
Yes.
Thank you. 9-1.
All right, so that's 10 yes, 1 no.
Okay. So I have to hop off now. So I guess there's one more measure. And I don't know if you want to continue on or want to do it at a different time.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to reschedule and do it at a different time. This is Reva. Thank you very much, Chris.
Okay.
Just because we're almost at time, we do want to provide any opportunity for public comment from anyone. But just, I think, to give the final measure its due time with everybody available, I think we'll need to reschedule a time to discuss it, and so we'll be in touch with doing that. Any comments from the committee?
This is measure 0622, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Suzanne. I'll send out an email tomorrow morning to get your availability for a call. I'll email the committee.
Is there any comment from anyone in the audience? Operator?
Thank you. At this time, if you have a question or a comment, please press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. And again, that's star 1 to ask a question. There are no questions or comments at this time.
Thank you, operator. All right. Andy, it looks like we're kind of finished up. Did you want to have any concluding?
Just thank you, everybody. I apologize that we couldn't get it done in time, but I think the e-measure thing is something we need to learn a lot about, so it does take some time. So thank you, and we'll look forward to the next call, which will hopefully be the last call to do this level of review.
Thank you, everyone.